Welcome to another Scientology Fair Game podcast. Hi, Mikey.
Hi, Lily. One day I'm going to write a little note for you that says, welcome to this week's episode of the Fair Game podcast. And you can just read it.
Yes.
Because, you know, you're an actress. You can read lines.
Yeah, that's all. Having to think for myself, that's odd. All right. Hey, introduce our guest today, Mikey.
Well, this is someone pretty special because we have not talked about this before. And in fact, there hasn't been a whole lot of discussion in like mainstream media or in the sort of world of Scientology of the subject that this person is an expert on. His name is Dylan Gill, and he was formerly a staff member at the Church of Spiritual Technology, which we will go into a great length describing what that is and what it does and et cetera, et cetera. But it is the organization that was created to archive and preserve the works of L. Ron Hubbard for eternity.
Listen, so I was, you know, considered a celebrity Scientologist, like part of the inner circle of the elite of the celeb. I didn't know, even know this existed.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, welcome, Dylan.
Yes. Hi, Dylan.
Hello.
Sorry, it took us a bit to get to you.
No worries.
So, Dylan, just to go into a little bit of your history, you were a kid, you were a child who got into Scientology at age 11. Your father was introduced to it by an uncle, correct? And then you went into the Sea Org, right, at 14?
Yes.
So you were handed over to the Scientology Sea Organization at 14. What was your life like before? What was it like joining the Sea Org?
Well, my life prior is I was volunteering at a mission in Santa Cruz, like selling Dianetics door to door so I could be in exchange for my classes. We got into it quite a bit earlier. My grandfather was involved in the South Lake Tahoe mission and did classes. So my whole family has kind of been involved and out and in. And it's my uncle and father and aunt that are still in and kind of pushing everything. But yeah, so getting into the Sea Org was, you know, your typical, at that time, the TTC was heavily being recruited for, which is the Technical Training Corps. And so they were sending out missions from FLAG to recruit as many people as possible. That's kind of right when the basics came out, all the self-analysis. And instead of the original Hubbard Apprentice Scientologist course, it was the Success Through Communication course.
Right. They were just changing the names and changing and reselling the same books with some minor changes in some of the courses. But basically, so you were recruited at 14 to go into the Sea Org.
That's right, yeah.
But wait, I just got to go back to something. You were selling Dianetics door-to-door when you were like 11, 12, 13?
Yeah, yeah. They'd drop us off at apartment complexes. And you just knock on doors and you'd have like your quota was what you had. Like if they gave you three books, then you had to sell three books.
Why is that crazy to you, Mike?
I have yet to hear from someone that young doing door to door book sales.
I did OTTR zero on the courthouse for Larry Wurlesheim during the One Thin Dime March. So, yeah, I mean, they had kids doing all sorts of crap in San Francisco.
Well, they had kids doing all sorts of crap in every area of Scientology, whether you were a Sea Org member or not. Okay, so you then started living in a dorm, and your parents were basically ceased being your parents at that point, and the Sea Org became your primary caretaker. And you lived in a dorm. You had no parental supervision, correct?
Well, so when I got recruited and finally sent to the Sea Org, I was in San Francisco. And so it was my first plane flight was to Tampa, Florida. And I got in really late, obviously, you know, to get your stats. And so I got routed in to FLAG Crew, which is the estates org. And there was this like 60-year-old guy on the EPF that they had recruited from the ship when they bought the.
Now the EPF, just so everybody knows, is like a basic training for people coming boot into camp. The Sea Org. Yeah, boot
it's
camp.
The estate project force. Yeah, that's where you learn your staff statuses and you learn like how to be a Sea Org member.
Yeah, right. So how to be a Sea Org member? Uh huh.
Yeah, so we got in, and yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was my first experience. The lady in charge or over HCO or the personnel division, she was supposed to be my guardian. I'd never met her. And she ended up getting transferred somewhere. So I got picked up by the CMO and then I got put into the Scientology Sea Org mix. And I worked my ass off at the FLB for about 5 years.
Okay. So you sort of started your formative years in the Sea organization from when you were 14 and you were in Clearwater at what they call FLAG, the spiritual headquarters of Scientology, supposedly.
The Mecca
of technical perfection.
That's right.
But eventually you got transferred to Los Angeles and you, by this time you were in the Commodore's Messenger Org, the people that was what I was part of. It was the organization that was based originally was the people who ran messages for L. Ron Hubbard, but ultimately became sort of a senior organization in the hierarchy of Scientology.
An observation and execution arm, right?
Right. But somehow then you ended up going from the Commodore's Messenger Org in Los Angeles to what now is called Church of Spiritual Technology, or CST, or the Archives Project. It's got various names and terms that are used to describe it. How did that happen?
Well, there was a bunch of international personnel procurement missions done to man up people up at the INT base. And I had done a majority of those in Florida. And when it came time to man up LRH Archives, there were no qualified people at the time.
And the qualifications for the Archives Project or LRH Archives or CST were exceedingly high. I'm very well aware of this was the most confidential, considered the most important thing that was happening in Scientology and would happen in Scientology forever. And so you had to be like the perfect Scientologist. Very few people qualified to be put into Church of Spiritual Technology who had not been raised as Scientologists, in fact, because that's almost the only way of guaranteeing you don't have a drug history, you don't have a criminal history, you don't have a this, you know, all these things that are requirements for that, right?
Right. Not only that, they took your production record and your time in the Sea Org into account as well.
Right.
That's why they took myself and my wife at the time, and we were both in the personnel division of our Commodore's Messenger Org.
Right. There's
only four people, and they took two of them out to send them to. Because there's just nobody qualified. The only people qualified were like COB, COB assistant, a few people in RT and Religious Technology Center. Sorry, I used a bunch of words. And yeah, it was really hard to find people. And even then, my process took like almost 8 months to complete.
Sec checking on the e-meter, interrogation on the e-meter to make
sure. Yeah, Mike Gilchrist and I became really good friends.
Right. Make sure you're not a spy, not a government agent, not a reporter. I mean, these things go on forever. But ultimately, you made it through that, and then you were sent up to CST. And when I say up to, that's because the headquarters of CST is located in San Bernardino County at the top or near the top of the San Bernardino Mountain and near Lake Arrowhead. So why don't you describe what it was like when you went up there and what that property is like, because we're going to talk about that.
What is it, Dylan? What is CST?
It's pretty much like a library. Like, remember LRH said that he wanted to stamp his name into history? That's CST. In a nutshell.
Okay, so So CST is a location, like Mike said, up in the San Bernardino Mountains, Lake Arrowhead area, right, Mike? Is that what you said?
Yep.
And it's a private secret location where the most trusted of Sea Org members are putting L. Ron Hubbard's works into titanium plates in the ground. Is that what's happening there?
Yeah, pretty much. No, but what they did was, as a little background, that project started, the LRH Archives project started in around 1984 as a mission, as like four or five people to go on it for long term, or what they call like a garrison mission.
What does that mean? What is garrison mission?
It means long term. It's a military term, you know.
Okay.
So it meant like a long term mission that you're basically not coming back from. You're not going back on your old post. You're going to be doing that for the foreseeable future. Right. So when it started, they incorporated it. And I've done a little research afterwards, but I'll go into it later. It started as just a project to preserve all the technology. So they started going around and trying to find all the masters and all the originals and everything they could find at every base, every order of the day, every flag order, every ship order, everything.
This is all of LRH's writings and speeches. And
find the originals and copy all of those. And the hardest part, honestly, with all that was the recording. The reel-to-reel recordings. It was really hard to find original masters. They found many second and third copies, but never a lot of them. We never found the original master.
But the mission is to put all of this his works into these titanium plates to preserve them so that people can find them when there's Armageddon, there's a apocalypse. Whatever the fuck people are thinking, but basically this is so that other life forms, you know, the next whatever, will find these teachings of L. Ron Hubbard and continue Scientology.
Right, that's kind of what the symbols are about. That's why.
Why don't you tell us what's that? What are the symbols?
Well, they're infinity loop, and there's the ARC-KRC triangle in both of them.
So you're saying there's a symbol of that Scientology related is where? Like what where is that symbol?
Oh, they're in there's not one at the Lake Arrowhead base, but there's one in there's a base in New Mexico that's just to house all the works of L. Ron Hubbard.
Okay.
So it's a underground vault, or this one's a vault in a mountain.
Oh, so there's several vaults. So it's being kept in several locations?
Well,
why is that? What's the theory behind that?
So that there would be multiple places to come back to, kind of like why you have a library in each town, I guess, to ensure that the technology is preserved. So if you had it one place and that's where a meteor hit, then it's all gone. So redundancy is kind of was the idea behind that. So all the bases are set up the same.
And now these symbols that you're talking about, this is in... So the symbol is where? Where is the symbol?
In New Mexico, it's right by the runway that was made. And it's just a huge, you can't really see it from the ground. You have to be in the air to see it. Mm-hmm. So the idea would be if spirits or Thetans were coming back, they would know that symbol is like a safe, peaceful place. And they would be gravitated to it and then have the technology to restart mankind. It wasn't for LRH to come back and be like, oh, there's my symbol. I should come here, which is kind of like.
Well, thank you for clarifying that, because now it just sounds so much more sane.
Right. It did at the time.
I just want to be clear. Dylan, I know. Believe me, I know. I just want to be clear. Like, there was a moment of silence because what you just said, the last thing that you said, is so that spirits of Scientology, so we've all died. In these current bodies, that our spirits will be able to see the symbols from the sky. So it's not like we're in an airplane. We're literally not in bodies. And we will see the symbols and know that Scientology is there, so we could forward Scientology's important work.
Well, I guess you could also be in bodies. I mean, you know, if that happens. But yeah, you'd have to see it from the air, so you'd have to be.
I understood.
No, the other thing with CST is that there is a protocol for LRH to return to the main base in Lake Arrowhead.
And what is that?
And that's how it's set up. Well, he's supposed to come to the gates and walk in. And I seriously would wait for him while I was on post, like on guard duty at the main gate, thinking that maybe some kid would show up around 10 or 11 or like, and we were ready. We were totally ready for him.
And I know Mike and I, we've talked about this before. Scientology, certainly CST, the one up in Arrowhead and the one in, there's another one, right?
New Mexico.
New Mexico.
Petrolia, and then they bought like the Lady Washington mine in Central California. And then Creston would be another one and also in California.
Okay. So there's all these locations that are secret locations that even Scientologists don't know. Sea Org members don't even know about.
Right.
And these locations are supposed to preserve the works of L. Ron Hubbard. And also, they're also providing houses for L. Ron Hubbard at these locations that people put his pajamas out every night, put them back, maintaining. This is all tax-exempt money at work.
Right, yeah.
So now, did you have any protocols when it came to if a 10- or 11-year-old kid walked up to the gates, was there anything, were you guys told like, well, so these are things we need to verify or just let him in?
Well, I didn't think it'd be, I imagine he would have shown up with like somebody I would have known from like international, like Church of Scientology International or something. Hope it wouldn't be just him. Like, be like Jerry or something, or I don't know, but yeah, the advices for CST really didn't cover it. They covered that we set it up to have an infrastructure for LRH when he returned. So his houses are built to have a full complement of staff. There's an international exec log cabin on the main base for all the watchdog committee members or whoever at the time, IGs, I guess, right, inspector generals at the time, would be able to stay there and be available for him. And that's set up on the main base, but not really on the external bases. The external bases are set up kind of like an org would be, where it's like, just imagine it as a big like organization where that's his office.
Right.
It's this extravagant 7,000 square foot house in the middle of New Mexico is his office.
And that's just one.
Well, that's just one place. Yeah.
Let me just back up a bit because I just want to make sure everybody has the big picture of what CST is. Hubbard left the vast majority of his fortune to CST, but the condition was that it had to be tax exempt, and that's a whole other thing. But he also left CST basically the ownership of all his materials so that they would have a revenue stream, because he considered that CST, above and beyond everything else, was going to be his permanent memorial, permanent
legacy.
Record of what legacy, that's the exact word, his permanent legacy. And you know, we've sort of, you mentioned, you know, like stuff on titanium plates and this and that. The truth of the matter is, as Dylan said, that there has been an enormous amount of money and time and effort expended to gather together every single word that L. Ron Hubbard ever said or ever wrote in any form, anywhere, in like the lengths that has been gone to collect all this stuff is phenomenal. That then has all been taken and preserved in what is considered to be as close as indestructible format as you can get. In fact, like the writings of Hubbard are etched onto stainless steel plates that are then sealed in titanium containers that are filled with inert argon gas that are covered in shields made out of the same material used on the space shuttle heat shields, and buried in vaults that are dug into the ground, nuclear bomb-proof vaults with, like, th- the gold CDs of his lectures covered in glass and nickel-plated LPs and like all of this stuff, so that his great works and research and writings will be preserved for literally eternity. And this was and is the single most important thing that happens in Scientology. I mean, you can put aside everything else as to relative importance in Scientology. This is the most important thing that gets done and happens. And it remains that way today. And there are five of these locations that have been, there was actually to be six, another one in Wyoming, but that one got shut down by the local people who did not like, you know, they spent $20 million. They spent $20 million getting this property and starting to do what they were going to do and then got shut down. So, but there are these properties and they have these vaults in them. And as Dylan says, the redundant copies. This is so ridiculous. These things cost huge amounts of money to manufacture. It's not like you do it and it's just, you know, we're printing a book or two. And every time Miscavige modifies or updates the materials of Dianetics and Scientology, it all has to be redone. Wow. Like, you think about the cost of this stuff.
That's what I was saying, Mike. Is this all, like, why they have tax exemption is to be spending the millions and millions of dollars on this?
Well, I'm
what do you
describing
think something like this cost, Mike? It's insane.
Well, Dylan, what do you think it costs? I mean, I know you left before a lot of this stuff actually got rolling, but you must have some idea of how much the properties.
Well, we finished. So when I left, Petrola was almost completed. The vault was completed. When I left, Trementina was completely done. Lake Arrowhead was almost done. Our new production building cost like $14 million. The LRH house was like $3 million. We had two full-time engineers, retired engineers on the base for any time OSHA showed up. Anytime the inspectors, anytime permitting, we had two full-time engineers on the payroll that would laugh every Thursday. I'd pay them. And I was 18 years old. Not paying. They would just laugh and be like, how did you get in this position? Like, how are you running all these projects? So, because we were doing the LRH house, the vault at Lake Arrowhead, and then the new production building. Because prior to this, all the production and all the archiving was being done in the old Squirrel Inn hotel, basically. And the Squirrel Inn is the property that was purchased by CST up at Lake Arrowhead, so the irony isn't kind of lost.
But what does that mean? Is that like a Scientology term?
No, it was the name of the property.
Oh, that's funny.
Like Gilman Hot Springs or the Fort Harrison Hotel. It was the Squirrel Inn.
I got you. Hey, I have a question for you. So what was the purpose of having these people there for OSHA? What you mentioned that. What?
Oh, just for permitting and getting, like, so with, like, the way CST is set up in Lake Arrowhead is there's microwave set up from INT to CST. So if LRH does come back, they can communicate under the radar without, like, direct communication. So they don't have cell towers. They don't go through anything. This has been thought about. We were putting in fiber optic in, like, 1989.
Right.
Like, that wasn't even a thing then. It was just future. We put it in. We did heated pathways. Like, it was kind of they're set up to be like little museums, little places. The only base that's actually supposed to be active is the Lake Arrowhead one. The rest are only supposed to have caretakers on them, and they're supposed to just be a closed library, basically.
Right. And this is, just to remind everybody, this is where Tony Ortega and other report people have reported that this is where Shelley Miscavige might be, is at CST.
Because at the headquarters of CST.
Yes. The headquarters of CST. And nobody can get to it. You can't walk up to the gate. You can't ring a bell. You can't nothing.
Oh, you can't even drive past without the PIs that live permanently across the street coming out.
That's where the whole staff used to live. We used to live across the street right there. I used to play music in that. Yeah, where he came out, we used to play music in the basement that first time.
Oh, I didn't know you lived there. I thought you all lived on the property.
No, that was the plan. But while we were doing the little cabanas and stuff, we all lived in those houses. But that was the plan was to move on base. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's get back to L. Ron Hubbard. So the plan was that he would come back reincarnated to take over Scientology. But this is one of these locations is where he was going to be raised. Back to run Scientology.
Yeah, well, per the CST advices were all signed with four X's, which meant LRH, but there was no actual like real signatures. So it was like the Author Services International advices. They were also that way.
But what are advices and what did they say?
Advices are basically what LRH or Command Intention wanted for that organization and what their vision was.
And advices, just to clarify, this is just a term that was used to, like a euphemism to describe orders from L. Ron Hubbard. Okay. When Hubbard was trying to avoid the IRS and subpoenas from civil lawyers and the FBI, et cetera, he distanced himself from running the organization because the organization or organizations of Scientology were avenues to get to him.
Okay.
So this fiction started that orders from Hubbard were now to be called advices. Advice.
Oh, that's great.
He never signed them with his name, Love Ron. It was always Love asterisk or Love XXX.
Not even Love, but L. Ron Hubbard founder underneath, right? So he wasn't signing that anymore.
No, that, none of those. So these things all look like hand-typed pieces of paper like that are just have no signature. They often have addressed to Big P with CC to, you know, like these random weird names, like things that the insiders understood and knew what it was, but any outsider looking at it would go, I don't know what this is.
So what did they say?
They talked about everything. I mean, they went from, here's what you do about the state of this organization in Buffalo, to this is what I want done with the manuscript of my new book, to here is how you're supposed to preserve my writings, to this is what I want done with David Mayo, and he needs to be declared a suppressive person, to anything. Like, it was if you look back, and Leah, and look at, you know, all those big green volumes and red volumes and all the rambling writings that are contained in there about everything and anything, it was no different. It's just they were now put into a different form and called advices.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to know if there were any advices about what to do about L. Ron Hubbard's return, but he didn't foresee his death, so I don't.
Right, and that's where, like, the advices kind of became a questionable. I mean, that's where like my cognitive dissonance started when I kind of read those, when they're like, you know, what you were before in the Sea Org is no longer relevant. And now what you're doing is extremely relevant.
Right. That starts you on a path of like that started your questioning it, or were there other things?
Well, you know, one out point.
One
is enough to do an investigation.
No,
I
know.
Right? Yeah,
you're right. Absolutely.
So that's where, for me, I was kind of really good at admin. So I dealt with Shelly a lot. That's how I got RPF and sent on the RPF to RPF, was because I told Shelly that she would be declared or put on the RPF if LRH was there, because I was a messenger and I knew the policy, which was really stupid in hindsight.
So you worked side by side with Shelly.
And DM. I did his weekly reports went directly from, or my weekly reports went directly through ASI to him every week.
Okay.
And ASI,
Michael, remember, do you remember the two suitcases that were always around?
Yeah.
Two big suitcases that nobody knew what was inside. That was me. That was my stuff.
Okay. Let's back up a bit here.
Okay.
Author Services is what was called the literary agency of L. Ron Hubbard, and it was created as a for-profit organization, again, as a sort of a cutout to try and distance Hubbard from Scientology.
Right.
He created this thing that he called Author Services, which was his literary agency, except it was manned exclusively by Sea Org members.
Right.
And those Sea Org members, including David Biscavich, who was the boss of Author Services, and Norman Starkey, were...
Trustee.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But they were controlling Scientology, and everybody's weekly reports to L. Ron Hubbard, et cetera, all had to go to Author Services and be forwarded by David Biscavich through Pat Broeker to L. Ron Hubbard. So this was a sort of a cutout system, but there's another thing about Author Services, which was it was the income generator for L. Ron Hubbard at that period. At that time, so they collected royalties, they forced orgs to stock up with books that ended up in their basement or thrown in the garbage, because those things resulted in royalties coming to L. Ron Hubbard. They sold all the fiction rights. They sold the rights to the movie scripts and shit that he was writing to the Church of Scientology for enormous sums.
Do you remember the gold-plated Dianetics books that were put out, like hardbound, leather-bound? Those were specifically to go to CST. That's where they're saying for the archival project. So you would have, if you think back or ask your mom or people that were around it then, they were very overt about like the archival project, and you need to buy this gold cover. And so that was CST. And that would have been right around the mid 80s that they started, like maybe 87-ish, where they started pushing it real hard. And but nobody in the Sea Org would have known, like nobody at Int. I had to wear a different uniform at CST than I did at Int. So when I went to the international base, I had to put on my Sea Org uniform. And when I was at the Church of Spiritual Technology, I wore the Church of Spiritual Technology.
Right. Like you wouldn't wear that to gold, because people at gold would be like, hey, what the fuck is that? Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Who are you?
Right.
Exactly.
And then you couldn't tell even Sea Org members up at gold, which was another confidential.
I couldn't even tell security when I was coming. I was like, yeah, I'll be there between like 1:30 and 4:30.
Right.
Because they couldn't know how far away it was.
Right.
Oh, like, that makes sense.
I mean, this stuff is crazy.
And
Leah,
here's what's so let me ask you a question, Mike and Dylan. There's nothing confident. I mean, like, people know and have to read these policies in books. So why such secrecy about where they're located or among Scientologists and Sea Org members? That's not like, you know, I understand the confidential levels of Scientology being, but why such secrecy if these are things that people have to read and they see every day as Scientology?
Narcissistic control?
Right.
That's a pretty good answer. That's a very good answer. But also, just let me add one other thing. The view in Scientology is always that if you have something important, don't tell anybody that doesn't need to know, because that could result in, I don't know, protesters showing up, or the FBI showing up, or someone ratting you out for something in some way. This is the mindset that exists in Scientology. It goes all the way back to the days of the Apollo. We're not Scientology. L. Ron Hubbard has LRH on the funnel of the Apollo, but nobody's supposed to know that he's there.
Right.
Like this
and a Sea Org symbol.
Yeah, this irrational sort of we have to be secret about everything, it just sort of runs in the DNA of particularly the Sea Org,
Sea Org. Yeah. It's called a shore story. That's how it started, right. Was exactly where you just you were there. It described as a shore. That's what CST did, is we had our shore story. Anybody that we went to in the local towns, yeah, oh, we're just doing our, you know, like we had our shore story. We didn't say, oh, we're the Church of like Scientology or Sea Org. We were the Church of Spiritual Technology, and we're just archiving religious works. And that was our short story. And we just kept it real clean. And that's how they went into New Mexico. And same, it was just, you go in, it's right out of the Art of War, honestly, is you appear small when you're big, and then you don't draw as much attention. And there you go.
Appear small when you're big. Wow.
I learned that
and appear big when you're small.
right.
Exactly. Interesting. Art of War is a big part of Scientology.
Oh, yeah, Hubbard had a lot to say about the Art of War, a lot. But let me just back up to something else I wanted to say too. When Dylan was talking about these gold leaf editions of Dianetics, and you know all those crazy paintings by Frank Frazetta and all of these other things that were being done to fundraise, that money was being used to fund the Archives Project. The reason for that was the money from Hubbard's estate, you know, the $400 million or whatever it was, could not be transferred to fund CST until they had tax exemption. And that did not happen until 1993. But Hubbard died, and all of this stuff was, this was his fondest wish. This was the most important thing to be done. So somehow or another, money had to be generated to carry out these things until such time as the tax exemption could be gotten. And then the funding, the real funding source for CST would become available, which was Hubbard's estate, which he didn't give to his kids. He didn't give to his wife. He didn't give to anybody. It all was supposed to go to CST. So
they're all still being taken care of.
Who?
Arthur, Suzette, they still get paid.
Tiny amount.
In comparison to what they could, by the way, rightfully take today and should have inherited.
Right.
And why they get paid monthly like this is so that Scientology can control them and they don't speak out and they don't take over Scientology, which again, I think they should.
Absolutely. Right. I'm right with you.
Yeah.
but then I also want to make another larger point about this picture of CST and its importance. I said earlier, they basically had the rights to all of the Hubbard library, all of his materials. They in turn granted RTC
David Miscavige's organization.
Yes, the advanced technology and the trademarks of Scientology.
Okay.
But have the right to take them back for $100 if certain conditions are met. And they allow the Church of Scientology International to license the copyrighted material to the world. They become also the revenue streams for CST. But in the end, CST is the top of the Scientology pinnacle. It is not Religious Technology Center, which is David Miscavige's organization. It is CST. CST is the end of the road when it comes to Scientology. However, and you know, I'm not going to go into all the details of these structures, but it was actually a pretty clever system that was put in place between these three organizations, Church of Scientology International, Religious Technology, and CST, sort of being able to cross police one another. You had to be in good standing with CSI and you know, like all this bullshit. But that all went out the window when David Miscavige took over. And ultimately, he took the head of CST, a guy by the name of Russ Bellin, and put him in the hole, along with Tom Vorm and a couple of other people that were the senior executives of CST, just to sort of make the point of, I don't give a shit what the paper says. I'm the boss.
Right.
I run the show in Scientology.
So he runs it all. So he runs everything.
Yes.
Yeah, Russ was my commanding officer, and Tom Vorm I knew quite well. Also, Jim Isaacson was another senior exec that was there. My understanding, and this ties to Shelley, is when Russ got called down on a mission after Shelley had reorged the new organization and everything, and Tom Vorm also got called down, and they ultimately failed the mission. And they got sent to the hole, which left a huge opening in CST. So the only people that were there at the time that could have taken over those positions were not, like, would be Jane McNairn, who was their port captain, who's also a member of the board in to the Church of Scientology, or Church of Spiritual Technology. And then Sarah Bellin, his wife, who was, of course, Sue. So there wasn't really anybody there to take over CST with Tom Vorm and Russ Bellin being in there. Jim Isaacson was already 80 something years old. His wife Joyce was up there as well, as I believe. So there was a time where after Shelley would have done her lowers and all that, that it would have been pretty logical for her to go up there because she was fully cleared. She was our only terminal besides DM, who micromanaged the crap out of everything on that base, was that knew everything. So she would have been the likely person that would have gone up there. And JB later said that, which was John Berceau, said that he saw communication and mail going up there.
She didn't go up there to take over. Sarah took over. Sarah Bellin took over CST. Shelley was sent up there with a sec checker, a full-time sec checker, Antonella Tisi, as a place to put her out of sight and out of mind. And
why is that, Mike? Why was Shelley put there? We're assuming she's still alive. We're assuming that's where she is. But this is all things that we've been told from people who, like you said, saw communications. And people who were actually there. But
right.
So we're assuming that this is still true. But why would she have been put there in the first place?
Because she was becoming increasingly disaffected with her husband and his style. Yeah, his style of managing and controlling things. And she had ultimately stepped in to try and, As Dylan just mentioned, there was this project that had been going on for years of, quote, reorganizing international management that Miscavige had ordered be done repeatedly, and a dozen people had tried, and every one of them had failed, and every one of them had ended up in a miserable place. Ultimately, in the hole, but before that, they'd all got busted. This was just like a death wish to get assigned to do this management reorganization. And in the end, Shelley took over to get it done. Uh-huh. And she failed just as miserably as everybody else. And I know for a fact that she was beside herself trying to figure out how to satisfy the whims of Dave.
Right.
Like, he would say one day, this needs to be done. She would do that. And then the next day he'd say, oh, what the fuck did you do that for? Or this person should be the Int Finance Director. And she'd say, okay, well, I've put his name down to be the Int Finance Director. And then the next day would be, you put Wendell Reynolds as the Int Finance Director? What are you, an SP?
So the woman has not been seen in 15 years.
Well, she was seen once at a funeral.
Well, we don't know that's for sure.
I heard,
right? That's
what Tony Ortega. At Starbucks recently.
Right. Okay.
That we don't know, but she was at a funeral.
Yeah, but Shelly Miscavige is not going to be, because she can be picked up and subpoenaed and served, and that's not going to happen.
Right. And the only other thing I would add would be two small things, is she is an incredible resource. And CST, as we talked about in the beginning, it's extremely hard to find qualified people. Trust me, like, she was qualified. If we could have replaced her at her job, we would have tried to bring her up to CST. Because that's, everybody yeah. was fair, like, we, everybody's fair game at the international headquarters. That's where we yeah. pulled from, was like mostly, and most of them weren't qualified.
So right, I don't think this is a real job, but you know, to be talking about Shelly being qualified or not qualified, or anybody,
so
you know, in the
Sea Org.
All I would
say is that once you're done with your conditions, you're done in your Sea Org. Like, this whole idea and consideration of marriage, if she's healthy and she's alive, she's on post somewhere. That would be my guess. That's my two cents. Dylan Gill.
I would actually agree with you about that.
Yeah, listen, I hope she is alive and well. Let's discuss. So we were talking about you eventually, after being in the Sea Org for how many years, decided you didn't want to be there anymore. How long were you there for before you started thinking that?
Oh, I was in 7 years.
Okay, so after 7 years, you decide, and why? What was it? What was the thing that started the...
So my wife was the head of personnel at the Church of Spiritual Technology.
Uh-huh.
And she went a year without getting any statistics. Nobody to the base, like no new people to the base. And finally, they brought her down, Shelly, brought her down to RTC to... work under her under COB assistant, or under her. And 8 months went by and no communication. Didn't hear from, I sent birthday cards, I sent anniversary, like, you know, just normal stuff. And I didn't get anything from her. I got nothing back. And then I ended up getting sent down to the deck and, or to meth, do messed work, like physical labor, and get security checked for a while.
Interrogated. Yeah.
And because I false reported my square paces stat, which is a stat that covers all the areas of your base. Like, so if your front porch is counted as like a clean space, you say, okay, that's how many paces it takes. Like, it's a 10 by 10. It's 100 square paces. But somebody has to inspect it and say, yes, that's true, and then give you the stat. Either way, I got sent down to do messed work. And I knew that my wife was there, and she was at the base and I was at Happy Valley. They kept us away from everyone because we were CST staff and we weren't allowed to talk or look at or do anything with anyone because we were out security. And it was then that I kind of started questioning everything, because I knew policy. It's a suppressive act to withhold communication. And there was no ill intent. We weren't plotting. We were just saying, I love you. Happy anniversary. And
right. After not having seen each other for 8 months.
Yeah. It was a long time. It really sucked.
Yeah.
And so I saw her. I wanted to leave because I knew that the leaving staff routing form, the purpose of it is to keep you as a staff member, but you get on the system. So things start happening.
Yeah.
Because I was in personnel like most of my career at the Sea Org. So they refused and just made me write up overts and withholds and be more sec check.
You mean your transgressions and then more interrogations, right?
Yes. That everything I did wrong and every bad thought I've ever had against the church and everything for like a month or two. I was sleeping under the ethics person that was in the RP. I lived under their desk. That was my spot.
So you weren't even given a bed?
No, because I was a pretty big security risk at that time. And then I saw
that justifies. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, it did kind of.
Okay.
And I don't blame Jackson and PK, right? Like,
No, you blame the thinking in a cult for the way that they think is okay to treat its members consistently.
Yeah. I saw my wife and she told me to get through it and to stay on it. So I rededicated myself, and then she was made to write a knowledge report on me that I originated communication to her. And I don't know, it just hit. It hit hard and it hit different. And I realized that she loved Scientology more than she loved me.
I mean, that's not abnormal. Yeah.
The next night, I got up in the middle of the night and I ran down the river and went to Hemet and got chased by Gold Security and ended up on a Greyhound bus, and they never caught me.
Yeah. So you escaped. I mean, I'm sure they've taken precautions now for that to never happen again.
Yeah. All the stuff you've heard about security was probably because of people like me.
Right.
Yeah. You're exactly right about that. And that property, by the way, Dylan mentioned Happy Valley. Mm-hmm. Happy Valley is the name of another property that was like 7 miles away from Gilman Hot Springs, back behind an Indian reservation, the Saboba Indian Reservation. And it was an old, like it used to be like some sort of a retreat for kids or something. And it was called Happy Valley. That was the name that it had before we purchased the property. That is where the kids of the Sea Org members at the Int base lived. And mm-hmm. it is where people like Dylan and Vicky and Richard Asnaran, or people who were like too hot, too much of a mm-hmm. big threat to even be at the Int base, were kept. And because it was 7 miles down like a dirt road, it was considered that there wasn't much chance that anybody could escape from there. Dylan did, a couple of other people did, and ultimately that property was gotten rid of, and a lot more security measures were implemented after that had happened too. There are a couple of things that I'm still really interested in asking Dylan while we have the opportunity. Like, I'm one of the few people also that has actually been to that CST property. I had to go there with the lawyers when we were trying to gain tax exempt status for CST in order to inspect and see what was really going on there and blah, blah, blah. And I got a tour and blah, blah. But I haven't been to any of the other properties. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I have been inside the Hubbard Mansion that was built at the Int base called Bonnie View, which is like the ultimate. That's like the big daddy of Hubbard homes. But I am interested to hear because I know Dylan he's the only person I know that's been to inside the base at Tramontina, who's been to mm-hmm. Petrolia, who's been to Tuolumne. What are those? What's the inside of those houses like, Dylan?
Well, the other H house at the Twin Peaks. Oh, you went in that one, so you saw that. That was like every house was built to its motif, like surrounding. Like, so the one in New Mexico has Spanish tile laid in sand, and like special sand was brought in that they use on golf course bunkers to lay all the special Spanish tile. So it's actually laid on. It was just like a lot of. I spent a lot of time in the household unit, which is kind of what L. Ron Hubbard put together, meaning like this is everything that he expected to have in a home. And this is how you take care of it. This is how you wash clothes. This is how you do everything, basically. And that's how we built all the homes. And the one in New Mexico, it really is just. Like a good example is we used an architect firm out of Santa Fe, and they would have like custom log furniture built, and they'd load it up in a U-Haul. I would fly down there and then drive back to the base, and we'd put it all in how the exec log cabin got furnished. So it was like all custom handmade furniture, all like hand-hewn logs. In New Mexico, it's all adobe, it's all Spanish tile. So it's all like to fit the area that they're in.
Yeah.
And these houses were built with the idea that Hubbard would occupy them. They are not built as just a museum.
No, Yeah, we did a deal with Caterpillar, the generator company for the New Mexico. It was like almost $2 million to get that place is set up that if there's ever any power goes out, there's generators for every building, including the LRH house. If you look at the satellite, there's the big LRH house, and then there's a little building just to the right. That's a generator. That's like a 3-kilowatt generator. Rent that place. So it's set up for functionality. Absolutely.
Right.
After Target, you know, you might come back.
Yeah, whatever. I think that this is just an important point to make. Like this idea that Scientologists believe that L. Ron Hubbard is returning somehow is not just a sort of a fantasy. This was put into reality, but he hasn't showed up. Like it's
yeah. I was gonna say that is anybody wondering where he is? Because he's late.
Secretly, I'm sure, but nobody's going to say it out loud.
Because let me just say this to everybody. When you sign a Sea Org contract, you know, you sign this billion-year contract. Yes, it's, you know, comical, but when you sign that contract, as I signed it, as Mike signed it, you know, Dylan signed it, you know, you believe that you know, when you die, you're going to be reborn into another Scientology family. And you're going to continue the work of Scientology. That is the idea, that it's not maybe just this lifetime that you're going to serve the Sea Organization. And as a matter of fact, this is what they sell to us. Like as children, they say, you know, you came back. Like at very early age, they tell you this, like, well done being born into a Scientology family, Leah. Do you know how like OT that is
how
of you?
And that is.
Yeah, like you are like a totally, like you're OT, Leah, which is like a confidential, you know, that means that I'm operating as a spiritual at cause spiritual being. And, you know, when you're told that as a kid, like you're special, you know, that, wow, maybe I did that. You know, that's very powerful to say to children. And that is what they're saying to children today to get them to join the Sea Org. This is what they say to their Scientology parents. To get their kids to turn their kids over to Scientology Sea Org. They go, you know, how able is your kid? Like, what other game is your kid going to play? Being a doctor? Like, right. Get the fuck out of here. Like, there's no more important mission in life than to join the Sea Org and serve the Sea Org. And so when you sign these contracts and you die, L. Ron Hubbard has granted that Scientologist or Sea Org member 21, is it 21?
Yes.
21 years of a leave of absence. So you're okay to take an LOA until you're 21. You have to return, report back to the Sea Org. And no one's really kind of holding L. Ron Hubbard to this because it's been how many fucking years now?
So all I would say as a Sea Org member when that happened was he went and this is what I believe, but this is what I believed at the time, was that he went intentionally to Target 2. So then he's busy doing his shit, and we're supposed to keep, and what's the motto of a Sea Org? We come back.
Come back.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the whole idea, is that we're supposed to stay on, and what you said is exactly it. That's why I joined, to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
To have a purpose, and yes, to be around other people that have a purpose to make a world a better place. And
yeah.
You know, you throw a little big league sales in there and no kid has a chance. Like, really?
and you have parents that are willing to give you up and say, go do this. And they give you up. They give up parental rights to you.
Yeah.
You virtually never see them again. And if a Scientology parent says, hey, I don't know if I was okay with not seeing, then that parent's pulled in. That parent is interrogated. That parent is punished for having the balls and the audacity to ask about their children who are fulfilling this greater mission in life, and how dare they act like they're fucking parents. Like, this is the same response you get when you ask about a missing person in Scientology. That's the response that I got. Like, how fucking dare you ask about Shelley Miscavige? And I was penalized for it, and they continue to not answer the question, and they won't answer the question, regardless of what they continue to put out, that the LAPD dismissed my missing persons, or that's just simply not true. The LAPD never answered me.
Right.
Anyway, okay, so when you left and escaped, where did you go? Did you have family that were willing to take you in?
No, not really. My aunt did for a short amount of time, for like a week or two. Uh-huh. And then my dad kind of got a hold of her, and that's kind of when the church, it's when I got my declare. That's when they were sending them. So at that point, I was kind of...
So you got labeled an enemy.
Right, believing. Yeah. Well, and I guess when you leave the Ent base the way I did, you're not welcome to come back ever.
You're not welcome to come back no matter what you do.
I would. I would have at one point.
Well, not if you left the Sea Org. Even if you routed out, you would be considered, you know... You would still have this. No one leaves these international bases unscathed.
Right.
Yeah. But so you eventually obviously had somebody to help you, right?
No. I did become homeless for a couple of years. I slept under bridges. I slept on wherever I could, you know, really.
So your parents wouldn't take you in because you were now an enemy to Scientology?
My dad was a teacher at Delphi.
Right. So they wouldn't take you in because he would lose his job at a Scientology school.
Right.
And
right.
Your mom, I'm sorry, I didn't ask about your mom.
She passed away. So sorry. She's not alive. But she was never involved. My dad, they got divorced, but she's not with us. And other than that, no, I kind of did it all myself. I ended up in San Luis Obispo, and I matriculated into Cuesta College. Once I got in kind of the university system for California, they sort of took me under their wing a little bit, and I was able to sort of, I rented out a closet for the first time. It was a walk-in closet. So it was kind of nice. And then I ended up sharing a room and
you built yourself a life from literally being homeless.
Yeah, some would argue. But yeah, I don't know. I'm still alive. So
you have two children. You're
I right? do. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
They're the age that I got recruited to the Sea Org. It's not lost on me.
Could you imagine sending those two beautiful children of yours?
Not even a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see you've made it out. Dylan, the way you have, and that you've become what you've become. I mean, I hope you're proud of yourself.
It's a little bit rougher with that. But yeah, I hear you, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, listen, you know, Mike and I are always available to talk. We're always here.
I speak too much Scientologies, and it was too much my formative years. It burned into me. So.
No. We all talk Scientologies, especially... When we get together, you know, we talk in this shorthand, and it's totally fine. I just don't want our listeners to get, you know,
yeah.
Like,
and I'd
lost.
Rather provide value for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, but talking Scientology and code with each other is fine. I mean, I still do it. We all do it when we get together. It's not. It's just easier, which is the sad thing. It's just easier to go, it's fucking DevT. What the fuck is that? You know, like, it's just easier to go, it's interpolating, it's N-theta, you know, OT theory, PTS, SV, you know?
Yeah, I get more posts, so it's like DCOI, DCOE. Everybody's like, what?
Yes.
The only things that I would bring up about, like, CST that were kind of interesting was the level of anonymity. In like in CST itself, like we have there's a hidden org board in CST. So there's your normal estate. It's like an estates organizational mm-hmm. board, and so they're mm-hmm. set up like technology estates are set up a little differently in the Scientology org board. So it's like an estates org board, not a delivery. But even in that, there's a secret 3A, which is external, which are mm-hmm. all the external bases. So nobody even in CST. Really knew for a long time about the external bases. They just thought it was all happening at Lake Arrowhead.
Right.
So that's kind of the levels of.
Yes.
I didn't know about it for the first 3 or 4 months
Wow.
until I got put on post is the estate sec, and then they're like, oh, by the way,
right,
like,
right,
four more big projects going on. You're like,
what? Right, right, yeah, it's wild. Yeah, right, and you were wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, listen, Dylan, thank you so much for talking to us, and also we're going to put up your interview with Tony Ortega as well. And Mike, if you can put up those pictures of the symbols so people know what we're talking about.
Oh yeah, and I'll put there is now drone footage that has been taken of all these properties, and I will put links to all of that.
Yeah, I gave Tony all that. I gave Tony all the info because he had no clue about what. So he sent them all to me, and I explained everything to him.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
I do have one question that you guys might want to, like, recently. So the way I understand CST, the way it was set up was that, like, you mentioned it a little bit, Mike. ASI, we had direct contact with because of Norman Starkey.
Right.
But RTC, we were not, my understanding, and when you came, was you explained it with the inspections and everybody had to kind of wash each other's hand and make sure they're above board. But I remember explicitly not crossing channels. And recently Tony did do an article that kind of piqued my interest where there's a lot of videos on David Miscavige's personal site, right? DavidMiscavige.org or whatever.
Right.
And two of these videos are from Tom Vorm and Tom Willis. And they're like, David Miscavige was daily, like, mentoring me on how to
I understand.
And so it to me was like, my first thought was that he wouldn't be that stupid to do that. But I mean, maybe I'm giving more credit, but I'm thinking something changed once the tax exemption happened that they are able to kind of cross over more freely. So that just might be something future.
Yeah, certainly a lot changed with the tax exemption because now there's not really any oversight. But this has happened before, Dylan, where people have done and said things in order to puff up Miscavige that are actually incredibly damaging. There was a whole series of declarations that people in Church of Scientology International, all the leaders, wrote about Miscavige when the St. Pete Times were doing that series called The Truth Rundown. And they all say, oh, he's intimately involved in this. He does this. He's like, he's with us every moment of the day. He's catching the birds that are falling out of the trees and nurturing them back to good health and blah, 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 blah.
Without him, I would just be a miserable pile of crap.
Nothing would ever happen if he wasn't here and blah, blah, blah. And then subsequently, when a lawsuit gets filed, particularly the Rathbun lawsuit, where they allege that Miscavige was controlling the activities of those people who were down there harassing them, suddenly he says, I don't have anything to do with anything. I'm just RTC and I don't run Scientology. So this stuff happens routinely, but it's a matter of having people smart enough or who understand it well enough to, like, pick it out and go, whoa, wait a minute. There's something really wrong here. Like, you look at Tom Vorm and Tom Willis and go, what the hell are these guys doing saying that? Everybody else just sort of looks at it and goes, oh, more people supporting the great works of COB, who does everything in Scientology. So,
but I have a question for you, Mike. Who would be interested in this as far as, you know, a government agency to
nobody.
What you're saying?
Nobody.
So it doesn't matter that they say Dave Miscavige is in charge of everything, and then it doesn't matter that these places are using tax exempt money literally to waste. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
If anybody manages to serve David Miscavige in a civil lawsuit, it will matter a fuck of a lot because he will try again to claim he doesn't have anything to do with anything that is being alleged in this lawsuit. He lives the life of a monk who has nothing to do with the day-to-day operations of Scientology. That's when it will matter.
And where would they find these things that you're talking about, Mike? People saying that David Miscavige has his
on his own website.
On the DavidMiscavige.org website.
That's what was such an outpoint. I was like, oh my God. there's no way that they should be like, Tom Willis is sitting there basically saying, Mr. Miscavige is instrumental in daily activity. It's like, what? Like, that's supposed to not be even our whole, like, right. That's why our weekly report was so confidential. Nobody was supposed to know that we were sending everything we did every week with captions
to him directly.
David Miscavige.
Right.
So it was just an outpoint. I was just like, holy crap. Like, that just doesn't seem. And it was like Sea Org reserves is what paid for most of the buildings on CST, but it's the policy. Once they figure out that you're breaking the law, make sure you're the ones making the laws. So I think that's right. What he's operating off of, right? Is
yep.
He's that how holier than thou. It's that megalomania of like, nobody's going to catch me. And by the time they do, I'll have more lawyers in place to trump them over here.
Right.
But it's an interesting outpoint. Yes. There's also an LA address for CST, by the way, that they use quite a bit. And that's there. Also, when you called LA, that's I've always wanted to tell you this. When you called to talk to Shelly, there's an exchange at Big Blue that puts every phone call from, like, you call CST, it goes to LA, and then it exchanges up to the main base, and everything goes through that gate. All phone lines go through that main gate. There's no direct phone lines into CST. It's all through the main gate, and then they get transferred to where you need to be. So it's right. Just set up for extra security as well.
Sure. You, and
so then it
again,
can seem like you're calling there, but you're really calling LA.
Right. So, and right. There's no access to even 911 at these bases.
Exactly. Right. Right. Yeah. No, it's all through it. Through the card gate.
Yeah. Well, Dylan, thank you again for talking to us. We appreciate your time and your story. And until next time, we thank you all for listening.
Thanks.
Bye, Mikey. Bye, Dylan.
Bye.